Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by TBILaw.com.
For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events,
sign up now for TBISN.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about the amount of money a survivor gets from a lawsuit or settlement. He is talking about getting better from the brain injury. Find him on the web at TBILaw.com or call 800-992-9447.
And now, it is time for another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for being here tonight. I'm really excited about our guest, but before I bring her on, I'm going to do a little bit of housekeeping. As most of you know, if you're watching from the computer and you'd like a reminder about this show, there's a little button that says follow in your upper left-hand corner under the show logo. If you hit that button, you'll be sent an email reminder about the programs before they come on. I would also like to thank our sponsor, Gordon Johnson, TBILaw.com. We appreciate the sponsor. Also, if you're unable to listen to the program live and you want to play it back, all of our programs are archived on Blog Talk Radio. And if you have questions later, our guest call-in number is 424-243-9540. I think that's all of the housekeeping for right now. As most of you know, I had a ruptured brain aneurysm in 1995 and came very close to losing my life. I was in a coma for 11 days, had a near-death experience, a rather lengthy recovery, and the whole episode really shaped and changed my life. A lot of you have also heard me say that since 1995, up until this time last year when I was writing my book, I had never talked to another survivor, ever. I went through my complete recovery process to whatever extent that would be, mentally, physically, and spiritually, all on my own. The medical professionals never recommended that I look for a support group or anything like that. They just kind of sewed me up and sent me back into the universe where I encountered some deficits that apparently aren't going to go away, looked for ways to compensate dealing with those things, but had never talked to anybody else. And so about this time last year, I was looking for some endorsements for my book before it went to press. And I found at that time one organization, and I asked them if they would read my book and if they were on board with it, write me a review. And if not, that would be fine too. They did. But since that time, I've been very blessed to be introduced to many survivors. It was feast or famine, 17 years of no one, and the last 10 months of meeting hundreds of people. And, you know, sometimes that line blurs. I didn't think that, I wondered about affiliation with traumatic brain injury because I was an aneurysm survivor. However, one of the things that I've learned in the time that I've been around this group and so many other groups on the Facebook pages is that a lot of the residuals we suffer are the same. The other thing that I found out most recently in the last few weeks, actually, from listening to some of the others on these shows, is that a lot of us who had who have had brain aneurysms suffered a prior head trauma at another time in our life. For example, I was in a car accident where I hit my head on the windshield. It cracked the windshield, and I had a concussion. When I was a kid, I put on my brakes on my bicycle going down a hill, hit some gravel, flew over the handlebars, landed on my forehead, and got a big goose egg, also a concussive type thing. I didn't ever consider tying any of those earlier injuries to my brain aneurysm at age 35, many years later, but now I kind of wonder. Our guest will probably know, I undoubtedly know, a lot more than I do about aneurysms. I didn't make it. When I went to write my book last year, I was writing my story. I wasn't doing research on brain aneurysms, and I hadn't. I was simply telling my story. I've learned a lot in the last 10 months, but in 1995, they didn't know where my aneurysm came from. They said it could have been hereditary. It could have been a blow to the head at some point in my life. They just really didn't know. Could have been a number of reasons. But anyway, I've been very fortunate through Facebook to be connected with a lot of support pages, meet a lot of wonderful support people. And my guest tonight is Natalie Necro. And a lot of times I talk to survivors, and this is a different kind of survivor. Natalie actually lost her father unexpectedly and tragically from a brain aneurysm out of the blue. My dad is a huge baseball fan. Of course, here in the Midwest, well, she's a little from the Midwest too, but the Midwest where I'm from, Omaha, is the home of the College World Series, which is not the pros where her dad, Joe, played. But one of the cool things about her dad, a fun tip that I happened to find out, is he's one of the few and was one of the best knuckleballers in the sport of baseball, and spent, I think, about 13 years with the Houston Astros. Another unique thing about their family is that her uncle Phil was also a major league pitcher who's now in the Hall of Fame. So they come from a very athletic family, and when Natalie's father passed, she has founded an association. I'm going to let her tell you a little bit more about that, and I'll type into the chat room where you can find details. And she's, like I say, devoted her life as a tribute to her father, much of her life, to raising funding for research about aneurysms and for advocacy and heightened awareness. But I'm very honored and pleased to have our guest, Natalie Necro, on tonight. Are you with us?
I am here. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Natalie, tell us a little bit about your story. What happened exactly?
Sure. It will be 6 years on Saturday, as a matter of fact, that my father lost his life tragically to a ruptured brain aneurysm. And just to kind of give some background on the situation and how it happened, it was 4 weeks before my wedding. And the night before my dad had his rupture, we were on the phone and literally talked for probably 3 hours that night. And we were talking about the wedding and what song we were going to walk down the aisle to. And I had gotten all over his case because he hadn't gotten fitted for his tuxedo yet, and he had promised me that he was going the next day. And so we just had a really, really great father-daughter conversation. And ended the phone call, as we always did, saying, I love you, and thought for sure that I was going to talk to him the next morning. And the next day came, and I got this frantic phone call from my brother telling me that something had happened to my dad. And at that time, they didn't know what it was, but he was in the process of being life flighted from the rural hospital where he lived in Plant City, Florida, to Tampa, to St. Joseph's Hospital. And basically what happened was my dad had gotten up that morning, did what he did every day, went for a five-mile run. He went and ran some errands. He went and got fitted for his tuxedo and came home and kind of had a little headache. It was nothing major, but enough that it caused some sort of concern. And his wife at the time said, you know, let's go get this checked out just to be safe. Everything's okay. And my dad never, ever complained about being hurt or sick for any reason. So he kind of fought her a little bit, but they ended up just going to the doctor's office. It was a very small city where they were from, so they could just walk into the doctor's office. And he said, you know, he had a headache, but it had subsided, and he really needed to, you know, get back to what he was doing during that day. But the doctor wasn't there, but the nurse was, and the nurse took his vital signs and said, well, you know, you seem fine, but, you know, I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to give you, you know, the autonomy to just go about your day. So why don't you go ahead and walk across the street to the emergency room and just tell them that you have chest pains, which he didn't have chest pains, but the nurse knew that if she went, right. If he went to the ER, he could say he had chest pains and they would put him in a room right away.
Mm-hmm.
So we walked over to the, for those that are listening, that's a little side thing that you can do. It's a little secret, I guess.
Yeah.
To get right in when you're in the ER. But so he walked into the ER and he said he had chest pains. They immediately put him in a room. The doctor came in, and when the doctor walked into the room, he said, you know what, doctor, I don't have chest pains. I've never had chest pains. I had a little bit of a headache, but it's gone. I need to go. You know, I've got things I need to do today, so I just need to get out of here. And the doctor said, well, you know, let me take your vitals and make sure everything's okay. So he took his vital signs and everything was fine. And the doctor said, well, you know, I'm going to take your vitals for, you know, like 45 minutes, and if everything checks out, I'll just send you home. So the doctor did that every, you know, 15 minutes, took his vitals, and my dad was checking out fine. And the last time the doctor came in, he said, you know what, I'm going to come back in one more time in 15 more minutes, and if everything's fine, I'm just going to send you on your way, because obviously, you know, you're fine. And right when the doctor walked out of the room, my dad, and I wasn't there, but the story that I heard was my dad grabbed his head and he said, oh my God, I feel like my brain's bleeding. And which was exactly what was happening, because it was right then that he had his rupture, and he immediately dropped to the floor. The, you know, the doctors came in and he fell straight into a coma, and that was it. I mean, his aneurysm was so large and so deep, we later found out that he was literally gone within seconds. And about that time was when I got the phone call from my brother. And at this time, everybody thought that something had happened. The nurses had told my brother that, you know, they thought he had a heart attack because my dad had came in and said he had chest pains, which wasn't the case. But so when my brother called me, he said, you know, they think that Dad had a heart attack. He's being life flighted to St. Joseph's Hospital, and you just need to get here. And I live in Arizona. It was like 10 o'clock in the morning. I was getting ready to go into this big presentation that I had in front of my entire company at the time, and I just became frantic, and I didn't really know what to do because, you know, everything kind of flashes in front of your eyes when you get news like that. So I just got in my car, and I drove to the airport. And I said, I need to get on the first plane that I can to Florida. I didn't have any clothes. I didn't have a toothbrush. I mean, I didn't have anything with me, but I just knew I needed to get to Florida right away. So I got on a plane and ended up getting to Florida with the time difference and everything else. By the time I got to Florida, it was about midnight that night. And I immediately went straight to the hospital and saw my dad. And when I got to the hospital was when I actually found out what had happened was that he had had an aneurysm. And, you know, I walked into the ICU room, and he looked so, he looked completely healthy. He He looked like he was just going to pop out of bed any second, but he had all these tubes coming out of him, and he was on life support. And that's when the doctor came in and really explained to us what had happened. And they said, you know, we want to give it through the night to see if he shows any signs of life in the morning, because the first 24 hours are the most critical after somebody experiences the aneurysm. And so the next morning they did some tests, and they took him off life support to see if he would breathe at all on his own. And that didn't happen, and they kept him off for, it was about 12 minutes. And then they finally came to the family and said, you know, he's completely brain dead, and you can choose to leave him in this vegetative state for the rest of his life, or you can, you know, make the decision to take him off life support, and he's still a viable candidate to donate his organs if you would choose to do that. So as a family, we decided that that was, you know, what my dad would have wanted. And so we all gathered around the hospital bed and, you know, prayed and said our final goodbyes and left the hospital, and that was, you know, and that was it. But I remember leaving the hospital just completely distraught and devastated and not even really understanding what an aneurysm was. So I said, you know, I'm just going to go do a bunch of research. I'm going to find out as much as I can about this enemy, as I call it, this enemy that just yes. took my dad's life so unexpectedly. And so the more research I did, the more I discovered how common they are. No, I mean, I had no clue that, you know, it's as common as 1 in 15 people that will have an aneurysm. And I said, you know, I've got to do something. I've got to do something that is going to, one, you know, keep my dad's legacy alive, and two, you know, really educate others on the warning signs to look for and the fact that this is a condition that's 100% treatable if you know that you have one. So I started the Joe Necro Foundation, named after my dad, of course. And, you know, our mission is solely to support aneurysm research, treatment, and awareness. And we started with, you know, a small little chapter in Phoenix, Arizona, which is where I live. And we've now grown to, we have 10 chapters across the U.S. with probably, our estimate right now is probably 6 to 8 more that are coming on in 2013. And it's just really, it's become my total passion, because I'm seeing the difference that it's making in so many people's lives. I'm seeing the way that we're affecting different communities and letting them know the importance of getting scanned and to know their medical history, and if this is a condition that runs in their family, that they definitely need to go get tested. So it's really been an inspiration for me. It's been a passion. It's been, you know, something that I've just devoted my entire life to since I lost Dad. And in the process, it's been very therapeutic for me. It's been very it's been a very good healing process. But it's also been the opportunity for us to reach out to other people and help others, which I know is what my dad would have done if he were here.
Absolutely. I'm going to type in the chat room, and I apologize. Is it the JoeNecroFoundation.org? Is that your site?
No, the in front of it. It's just JoeNecroFoundation.org. But if it's hard for people to spell it, they can just go to JNFoundation.org, and it'll route directly to the site as well.
That's cool. I did type it into the chat room, which
okay,
is
great.
Joe. So it's for anyone listening who's not in the chat room, it's Joe, JoeNecroFoundation, JoeNecroFoundation.org. And make sure to look that up. And she also has a Facebook page.
Well, we have several Facebook pages, actually, because we have a main one for the foundation. We've got several different sites for our different chapters. But then we have a group support page that it's the brain aneurysm /AVM group discussion page.
That's where I met you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Something that we just started that page not even 3 weeks ago. And I can't even believe how many people have joined the group and the conversations that are going back and forth, the stories that people are sharing. I mean, it's just really, really encouraging. It's inspiring. And it's great to know that what we're trying to do is making a difference and reaching other people.
It really is. That she asked me this morning which one of the pages that I met her on, and one of these things I was talking about earlier in the show is, you know, from going to knowing no one to when my book started getting out at the first of the year and I had a Facebook page for it, I started getting friended from a lot of different both TBI and aneurysm groups. And there's probably about, I don't know, six or seven of them off to the side on my Facebook page. And one of the things you've probably found out in your research is that a lot of us who survive have a hard time keeping things straight sometimes and hard time with our memory. And so a lot of the names I recognize, but just didn't have any idea until you just said that, which one of the groups. But, you know, that's another where you added, I think it started out as aneurysm and you put /AVM. And I remember a conversation that, you know, they were talking a little bit about the similarity between the AVM and the aneurysm. And that's what I'm finding about a lot of TBIs. I was hoping one of our regulars, Les Paul, would be on the show tonight. He had an aneurysm first and then went on to have a traumatic brain injury. And like I said before, a number of the people that I've met since then have first at some other time in their life had some kind of a head injury that they didn't think amounted to anything, and then subsequently wound up having an aneurysm at some point in their life in the future. Now, when you said about the hereditary, I know that that's one of the possibilities. Was there a hereditary factor that you know of in your family? Because
there was not. My dad was the first, and I never give medical advice. I never claim to be a doctor, nor would I ever desire to be one, because I just admire them so much for their knowledge. But in the research that I've done and what I have been told, it is typically the first generation that is where the line is, the hereditary genetic factor trait goes along. So, meaning my brother and I both had an MRA done just months after my dad passed away. Now, is it necessary for, you know, if I have children? No. Only if there was something that was wrong with me as well. But it's typically, they recommend that the first generation are the ones that get scanned.
Okay, great. Well, and that was another thing that's changed. I was never told. It kind of freaked me out. There was a lot of blessings and some scary stuff on this journey I've been on for the last 10 months, because my surgeon was long gone. I was very blessed. There was a visiting surgeon in our town, and microneurosurgical techniques were relatively new in 1995, and we had a visiting surgeon who had studied with the founder of microneurosurgical techniques, who happened to be here at the university teaching our doctors how to do the clipping procedure, which was the only choice back in 1995. You died or you had the clipping procedure. And I was very blessed that my folks were able to get a hold of this guy and that he took on my case, ultimately saved my life, I believe, with God's help. And but then he was gone. He had been in our town about 2 years before I needed him and left a year after. And it was never recommended that I see a neurologist. It was never recommended that I have any ongoing scans or follow-up treatments. He just told me that the things I complained about that I couldn't remember, you know, I didn't have short-term memory anymore, seem to have a lot wider mood swings, get something I call full basket syndrome when there's too many balls in the air. I get a lot of agitation, a lot of headaches, chronic pain from my incision mark. I line listed these things, and he basically told me that, you know, those things would probably resolve in time, and like I said, sent me out into the world. And, you know, over the last decade and a half, you know, I've been on just about every kind of medication you can try. I found for me, and this isn't true for everyone, and I'll echo what Natalie said, this radio station nor any of my guests, we aren't doctors, nor do we profess to be. We're sharing our experience, strength, hope, and observation, so that that's not confused. But in any case, you know, after the medications really never helped me, any of my symptoms, but they did give me other problems, you know, like stomach problems and a rash one time. And so that really wasn't the way for me to go. So I've tried acupuncture, acupressure, massage, myofascia, pain syndrome treatments, hypnosis with one of our fellow hosts, Keith Anthony. So, you know, a number of different treatments to try to get relief, but it wasn't until I came across these first Facebook pages of survivors that I felt like I was an alien who just got dropped on the planet walking in completely blind. These people who are a year or two out knew so much more than I did. They had been having scans, you know, every 6 months or every year. They had been involved in support groups, which incidentally we still don't have, didn't have in 95, don't have still, in the largest city in Nebraska, for TBI, brain aneurysm, or anything like that. We don't have any kind of a group. And so, you know, while I had the comfort of the association with all of these other survivors, knowing that I wasn't alone like I thought I was all this time, and I didn't have to pretend anymore. At the same time, you know, I didn't know that having multiples was a possibility. I could have lived the rest of my life without knowing that, I think. And also that people were getting regular scans, and that the protocol these days is that if the aneurysm apparently is under a certain size, they develop a wait-and-see attitude. And if it's over a certain size, they have still the clipping technique. They use different hardware than they used on me. Like, I can never have an MRI or anything magnetic, or it'll suck the clip out of my head, I guess.
Right.
But the clipping, and then I know that they came up with the coiling procedure a number of years later. That's probably the second oldest. And then I'm just reading what in the last year or two, they've now started doing the bypass or PED, whatever that's called. And then the Onyx, which I kind of likened to crazy glue, kind of a thing. So there's a few newer procedures that people are trying in some limited places around the country, but it, like I say, it was just like getting dropped in the deep end, I guess you'd say. But I certainly can empathize with the feeling that your father had. I experienced that same feeling. I'm very sorry for your loss.
I'm sorry for what you've had to go through.
So did you get married? That must have been a bitter...
Yeah, I did. I mean, the invitations had already been sent. It was, and we had a fairly large wedding, and I had a lot of people ask me what I was going to do, and I knew that my dad would want me to go through with it. And I'll tell you, it's very interesting because my husband, surprisingly enough, is the only guy that my dad ever liked that I dated. So at least I know that I had my at least I know that I had my dad's blessing. But it was a very bittersweet wedding, I will say that. You know, I had a chair set up front with his picture on it, and so he was right there. My brother walked me down the aisle, and my family is just wonderful, and so many of them were there. And we would all be laughing and joking 1 minute, talking about a funny story or something, and then we would be crying the next. And then we would, you know, turn around and we would laugh again. But I know that my dad was there. It was unbelievably freezing the night before my wedding, which never happens to be cold in Arizona, at least where I am. But the day of the wedding, it couldn't have been more beautiful. And I know that my dad had a hand in that, too. So it was definitely bittersweet. But I know that he wouldn't have wanted me to have it any other way.
No, I'm sure that he wouldn't have. You know, I don't know why a lot of us, you know, ponder the why did I make it and someone else didn't. I don't do that anymore because I'm not going to know the answer until I'm on the other side for good. But what I do know from my own experience is that there is another side, and I do believe that your dad was there. Heaven must have needed another angel early, and unfortunately it was him. But
you know, it's so interesting that you say that, because the night that we all came home from the hospital, and you know, there was a bunch of friends and family that were waiting at my brother's house because this was in Florida, and we were all sitting around. It was really, really late at night. And one of the questions that my brother said was, I just don't understand. You know, people always say, well, it must have been their time to go. It was their time to go. And he said it wasn't his time to go. He was young. He had so much going on in his life, and it wasn't his time. And one of my brother's very dear friends, and I say this all the time now because I got it from him, said, you know what? God must have just needed a special angel that day. I've never heard anybody else say that until you did just now.
No, I believe that. I believe that, and there's things about destiny. I don't pretend to understand it all. I was just a regular gal who was 35 years old and best health of my life. Had just had a physical 2 weeks before, and had no reason to expect. I hadn't been sick. I had broken my femur bone back when I was 17 years old. But other than that, nothing, you know, and I was just having a regular day. Like we all get up in the morning and we have a regular day. And that pain you described your dad is having, that was the onset of mine, was boom, out of the blue. Like I had just gotten shot in the head, or an axe had gotten buried in my head, and that did not subside. And you know some of my story, and I'm sure you've studied this with all of the work that you've done, how frequently this happens. But I knew I needed to go to an emergency room. I knew I needed to go to an emergency room that minute I did. They misdiagnosed me with a muscle spasm in my neck and sent me home. And if fate wouldn't have been with me that day, and I wouldn't have happened to have been with my father, which I never was during the day. It's interesting, our father's stories. I lived alone. I would have gone home and died alone at my home overnight.
And you know, I think that's very common, that people go to the ER, they complain that they have a headache or something, they get misdiagnosed with a migraine, they go home, and then they have a rupture. And
right.
I think that it's just very common that people are dismissed quite frequently from the ER because migraines and headaches are so common.
Yes,
absolutely. And let people know to say, you know, no, this is the worst headache I've ever had in my life. Or they know to say, you know what, I'm not leaving here until I get an MRA or I get an MRI because I want to make sure that I'm okay. And so part of what we're doing is on the foundation level is educating people on what to do if they have the worst headache of their life, or what to do if they're just having a really bad nagging headache, and what the questions to ask, and what to do when they get to the ER so that they aren't dismissed and misdiagnosed.
You know, one thing, I don't know what a person would do if they put a note in their purse just in case, but I got to tell you, in that blinding pain that just struck you know, as fast as a bolt of lightning zipping through my head. It was so intense that when I was in the emergency room, I couldn't think. I was doing everything. In fact, you know, it had ruptured. That's what had happened to me at that point. So I'm sitting in the emergency room trying to communicate, and it was all I could do to not, I'm trying to focus on not falling on the floor, not throwing up, just trying to get my bearings. I didn't think the doctor was right. For one thing, one of the things I find extremely unforgivable is that this doctor wasn't a stranger in the ER room. It was the guy who had been my family doctor for about 15 years. So his history of me was that I called once a year when I had a cold to get an antibiotic. So it wasn't like I was some hypochondriac who was in there complaining of stuff all the time, or that I had any history of headaches or muscle spasms or anything like that. I had no history. But when we were in the emergency room and he said I was having a muscle spasm in my neck, I didn't think that was the case. But honest to God, I couldn't have been my own advocate, because I remember all I could think of at that time, the pain was so intense, and I didn't, and you know, you don't have any idea what the hell's happening to you. You know, you've never experienced anything like that. And so I don't know if anybody who hasn't been there gets this, but I couldn't explain it to him. What my best hope was at that moment is that the pain pills he was giving me for my quote-unquote muscle spasm in my neck would make the pain stop long enough for me to be able to communicate adequately, you know, what was wrong, that I knew it wasn't a muscle spasm in my neck, and I could have articulated better what the feeling was. But they did the regular Neuro 101 test, shined a flashlight in my eye and checked my reflexes, and apparently all those things checked out, like they were doing with your dad, you know, early on in those examinations that they were doing. You know, I happened to have one examination like that, and they sent me home, you know, with pain pills for a muscle spasm in my neck. So apparently, you know, you can, this is two cases, you know, right here, where people have gone to the emergency room and they've apparently, quote unquote, passed the tests, while it's going on, you know. So the actual bleed or rupture must be going on a while before the symptoms show up, you know what I mean? Because to find out later what was actually going on when I was in that emergency room on day one, to see what came after that, there's no way my test should have been coming out normal, you know, that my eyes should have been responding to the flashlight, or I should have been doing the reflex stuff or whatever. But, you know, in any case, that bleed was allowed to go on for 24 hours undiagnosed until I went back to the hospital the next day. They did do a scan at that time, saw the bleed, but the way they handled it back then, they knew I needed the surgery. It happened on a Monday and was misdiagnosed. They figured out what it was on a Tuesday, and they had me wait. The swelling was so bad in my brain at that point that the brain surgery I needed, they told my parents that if they did it right then, right away, that the swelling was so bad, they really didn't have room to work, and there was a good chance that my quality of life would be severely compromised if they tried to do the surgery at that time, and that the other option would be to wait a few days while this bleed is going on, giving me medication that hopefully would bring the swelling down and give me a better chance at a quality of life. If I were able to make it through the surgery, they'd have more room to maneuver. But the risk of waiting for that better outcome is exactly what happened with your dad, that what had already built enough pressure to start seeping blood into my brain would explode, and that's the end of it. you know, and then it's quick and you're gone. And my parents, you know, like you, you know, the family has to think about, put their own selfishness aside and think about what that person would have wanted. And when you were talking, I was thinking about the fact that your dad was such a stellar athlete, you know, had always been an athlete, that you have athletics in your family, that there's a lot of scenarios that could have come about that I don't think he would have really appreciated with the life that he had lived before and what he was accustomed to. Some things are very hard to, some changes are so profound in your life, they're very hard to come to grips with. And I think that you were exactly right, you know, what your family decided, and your dad helped a lot of other people because of the way that you went about that. He was able to go on to the spiritual plane and do what was apparently what was needed out of him. And there's others in the chat room who also, in the course of their aneurysms and traumatic brain injuries, that also have had near-death experiences. A lot of us report a lot of common things, but one thing that none of us deny is that we all witnessed a soul life, that our body is the carrying case of the soul. The soul leaves the body, goes on to the next plane, if you will, and that, you know, you will see your dad again. Your spirits will encounter each other again, and he'll be so proud.
Well, thank you. I mean, I see him every day, so there's not a day that goes by when something doesn't happen that I just know that it's him. And, you know, going back to what I was saying about the family making the decision, you know, one thing that I remind myself of continuously when I want to cry and just and so sad that he's gone and his life was cut so short, I remind myself that his death, as tragic, as sudden, and as horrible as it was for our family and for those that were very, very close to him, he was actually able to save six other people through the organ donations, that they were able to harvest six of his organs, and which we had talked to the doctors about as soon as we made the decision that, you know, we were going to take him off life support. So I know that there are six people today that are living because of my dad.
And because of you and your tribute and your passion, you know, your life course got set. It's interesting. I've been a financial planner for 25 years, and when I finally decided to write the book that I had journaled back in 95, last year, my life changed on a course that I never expected in a million years, based on my life before, that it was going to go, you know, down a fork in the road and proceed down another path. And I think, you know, that happened to you. You had a life as you knew it before this tragic thing happened in your family, and that caused you to go down a different fork in the road that you probably never would have considered. Hell, you and I didn't even really know what an aneurysm was until it came
exactly up
in our life.
Yeah.
And now suddenly, you know, we're both out in our own ways trying to promote awareness, and you're just doing a great job of it. I'm sure that the efforts alone that you've made, not only your dad's donations, but, you know, and I hate that, you know, the fact that happened to him set your course on a destiny where now you've had the opportunity to probably save a lot of lives yourself, and you're probably not going to know directly how many lives that is, because there's going to be somebody out there reading those boards that I've been reading who goes in and gets a scan who wouldn't have otherwise. They might have had it happen in the ilk that I did, where nobody ever suggested that someone should do that, and they go in, get that scan, and their life is saved because it was picked up before it got as big and buried as in the situation of your dad. So I think, you know, your whole family is to be commended for the help that they've given toward awareness and fundraising. Now, one thing I wanted to mention to you, when I was looking on the site, I saw that one of your big events for fundraising is the knuckleball. And for those of you who came in a little late to the chat room tonight, this is Natalie Negro. Her father, Joe, was a famous baseball player, the king of the knuckleball, hard thing to do. And I wanted to ask you, do you know how to do it, Natalie?
I do. Yeah,
I knew you would.
I was pretty much born on a baseball field, to say the least. But yeah, my dad taught both my brother and I to throw it. My brother's much better at it than I am, but I can throw it, yes.
I knew you'd be able to do that. When I was talking to my husband and I said, yeah, it looks like her uncle's in the Hall of Fame. Her dad, you know, was doing this stuff. And then I said, I'll bet you anything, growing up in the family, that Natalie probably knows how to do that too. But the event, is it called the Knuckleball in Houston?
It is.
I think you've had, what, three or four of those?
We've had three. We should have had four, but the first one got postponed because 2 days before the first event took place, Hurricane Ike hit the Houston area and it just devastated the city. So we postponed it for several months, waiting for the city to recuperate and everything else. So we've had three, all of which have been very, very, very successful. And, you know, it's kind of taking all the elements and the things that my dad loved and combining them into one night. So there's a little bit of, like, casino gambling at the beginning, and then we have country music, and we have a live auction and a silent auction. And it is a black tie. My dad was not big on black tie. He was a pretty casual guy. But I found that when people get dressed up, they like to spend money. So we do
awesome.
A black tie. And
it's held at Minute Maid Park
right.
Stadium, so the event's right at home in the ball stadium, biggest ball stadium down there, isn't it, in Houston?
Right. Well, he was, yeah, I mean, my dad played 22 years in the major leagues, but 13 of those were with the Astros. So the very first fundraiser that we did was the knuckleball, and it was, I knew that the first place that I wanted to have an event was going to be in the city that gave so much to our family and meant so much to my dad, and that was Houston. So since then, it's just grown and become bigger and better each year. And matter of fact, we just set the date yesterday for the 2013 knuckleball, which will take place on June 22nd. But it involves more than just baseball, because many of the guys that my dad played with and people that played during his era come as the athletes of the night, but then we also include basketball and football players as well. So you kind of have the top, you know, the three major sports that are represented, and then, you know, a slew of athletes that are there. And people just love to come and hobnob with those guys, but then also, you know, really help a great cause and raise money for what our mission is, which is research, treatment, and awareness. So.
And I wanted to share with you, I thought it was kind of funny. I was looking through the pictures. I opened up the page and saw all those pictures you had of the event. And I saw this one little picture with the guy kind of turned to the side. And I said to my husband, oh, my God, that's Keith Anderson.
Yeah.
And I was laughing only because you don't know this, but in his song, Every Time I Hear Your Name, he brings this up about three times. He mentions a date. And before I ever heard that song, my husband and I happened to get married 05, 05, 05 at 5.
Yeah, I saw that. That's really neat.
Is that a trip or what? I'm sitting there looking at your pictures and the pictures of the event, and I'm like, oh, my God, she has Keith Anderson there.
Yeah,
is that
well,
a
Keith
trip
Anderson
or what?
Performed, he's a dear friend of mine, along with Chuck Wicks, who also came to the knuckleball last year. And we did a little special concert the night before knuckleball, and then we had something that just went off the cuff, because they came to knuckleball, just attended the event to have a good time, and then on at their own goodwill, they said, "Hey, let's go back to the hotel and we'll just sit in the lobby and have a little after party and play our music." So it was Keith Anderson and Chuck Wicks and then Trailer Choir, which is another country music group, all in the lobby of this hotel where we stayed, and hundreds of people just sitting around them as they were, you know, jamming on their guitars, and it was just a lot of fun. We ended up, I think they sang until like 4 a.m, but it was a lot of fun.
Wow. And you guys have raised in your three events almost $700,000 toward aneurysm research.
Actually,
have you
it's
not?
More than that. The first two events raised a little over $750,000, and so I probably need to update that number, because with the third event, we've surpassed $1 million now just with that event alone. But there's other events that we do throughout the year, but that's our largest. But our goal for next year for Knuckleball is just that event alone, for next year to raise over $1 million. So we have some high expectations for next year, but I think that we can get it done.
That is fabulous. Do you mind if I take a call?
No, not at all.
Okay, we've had a few people. I appreciate all of your patience. I didn't want to, in deference to our guest, I didn't want to interrupt her and compromise losing my train of thought, which happens anyway, so I've held off on the calls till closer to the end, but let's check and see if area code 803 had a question.
Oh, wow. This is Les Paul speaking. Do you hear me?
I do. You're kind of breaking up a little bit.
Oh, sorry. Do you hear me now better?
I hear you still breaking up.
Sorry. Well, first of all, I wanted to tell her I'm sorry about her loss, but wow, what a story you have to tell. I'm a brain aneurysm and brain injury survivor myself. I've had two brain aneurysms, and I mean, a lot of people know my story some, but what you're doing is just beautiful. And, you know, as an example, I was in a hospital for 2 weeks when they thought I had had a stroke. They couldn't figure out what was wrong with me, and I was in excruciating pain. I had gone almost entirely blind. Didn't know where I was at, and they just kept me there. It wasn't a major hospital, and so they didn't know what to do with me. And I was taken to another hospital in Augusta, Georgia, and when I went there, it instantly changed. Curtains were pulled. They told me not to move, barely breathe. You might rupture it even worse. You might die, and it's just totally different. So it's important that you go to the right hospital first.
Yes, and DJ always tells us that's a level one trauma hospital, and it's probably good. You got to dial back in or re-log in. You're like crackling up really bad.
Oh,
we can understand you, but please do, because I was talking about you earlier when I was doing the parallel, you know, once again on some of the similarities between the TBIs, the aneurysms, and some overlap that I was never aware existed. Let's check out, while Les Paul, and he's one of those, let's check out area code 765. Who do I have with me?
This would be Matthew Duffin.
Hello,
Matt
Duffin.
How are you?
I'm
good. How are you?
Now, Natalie, Matt was a sportscaster, basketball, in Indiana, so I knew our resident jock follower might know of your father. So you a baseball fan too, Matt?
Oh, I was a huge Houston Astros fan from 1970 when Lee May got traded there up until Craig Biggio retired. I had to go away finally, but I watched Joe Pitch after. Oh, it was great. That whole staff, Nolan Ryan, just enjoyable. And Natalie, appreciate to your family for what they have given to me.
Oh, well, thank you very, very much. I've been kind of following the chats back and forth, and I see you were like, how can you be a Necro and not throw a knuckleball? And I said, but I do throw a knuckleball. I don't know what you're talking about.
I knew so, she did. I knew she did.
Of course. Of course.
It was all coming out at the same time. I didn't
what's
think
that?
You would do that, but that was all coming out at the same time when I was writing that. You couldn't get out of your crib till you could at least throw a knuckleball with a Whipple ball.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, but my dad was actually pitching the night that I was born, and my mom went into labor. He was in Toronto. My mom was in labor, but she didn't want to call him and tell him because she didn't want to mess, you know, get him frazzled before the game. So she waited until I was delivered, and then she called the clubhouse and said, would you please tell Joe that we just had our daughter? And so my dad actually found out that I was born with a message that came on the Jumbotron that said, congratulations, Joe, you just had a little girl.
Oh,
so
cool.
I literally was born on the baseball field.
Cool. And everybody got a cigar in the clubhouse that night, I'm sure.
I'm sure they got that and probably a beer or two, you know.
Well, my too. I've been too. I'm at a different level. I was born into a baseball family myself. That's why I just grew up. My life is baseball, although it was other things for a while. Now it's brain injury recovery. But very interesting listening to you tonight, and I'm glad because we're growing and growing in the kind of guests that we're having, and you're giving us more substance. I appreciate that for a lot. And
oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. I do. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
Thanks,
and Kim,
Matt. And you can hang out. We'll probably roll over into a little overtime if you want to hear some music after we after we let Natalie go. She's had a very long day today. We've got about 5 minutes left. I'm going to mute you for just a minute because I've got another couple callers. I want to try to let them in, and then I will be back with you, okay?
Thank you all for listening to me. Thank you very much. Nice night.
Thank
bye, Matt.
Thank you for calling, Matt. Okay, it looks like we have area code 585. Who do I have with me?
Fantastic, Frank.
Fantastic, Frank.
Frank.
All of that.
Thanks. Did a great job tonight. I like the way I've switched the format to allow your guests to talk more than the way it has been going. I'm going to try and do the same thing on my show tomorrow night.
Great. Well, I actually do that when I have guests. I always do. If we're just having a discussion show, then I let calls come through the whole time because it's a discussion, you know, and we're all kind of discussing. But when I have guests, in deference to them and my train of thought, I like to give them the time to do the interview and then take the questions afterwards. So we'll be looking forward to hearing your show tomorrow night, Frank.
I'm going to have a guy on. His name is Craig. No, it's Chris Ayers. He's not related to Dick Ayers, the comic book artist, but he has drawn his own comic book. He is recovering from having some kind of blood cancer disease 7 or 8 years ago. He started writing this. He did a picture every day for 7 years of his journey of his recovery, and he's cured himself.
Wow.
I know it's not brain injury, but he's got to be very inspiring.
Great. Well, we look forward to hearing him, Frank.
Thank you.
Yeah, Frank, and I will put you back on. In fact, I think what I'm going to do, Keith Anthony, I see that you've been holding, and Craig, I know that you have a question. Do you have just a few extra minutes for us, Natalie?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay, she just said 90 seconds. What I'm going to do is a little last minute upkeep here, make a couple of quick announcements. I'm going to end the show in the usual way. But those of you that want to hang on, and we'll continue asking our last couple questions. Again, tonight, I really, really want to thank Natalie Negro for being our guest. She's doing some really fantastic, admirable things on her life journey and tribute to her father. And if you have a chance to check out her site or to go to her Facebook page, I know you'll get a lot out of it. Again, I want to thank our sponsor, Gordon Johnson, TBILaw.com. And again, if you have any questions for me, you can go to my In a Flash www.thebrainandjuryradionetwork.org site, and there's a tab, Contact the Author. If you want to send me an email, please do. Otherwise, I'm going to end the show in the usual way with something I believe that we all have. This is Leah West with Guardian Angel. For those of you staying on, we'll catch you on the other side of the hour. For those of you leaving, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
God replies, yes, it's your time to leave.
I love that.
But don't you worry, you won't be there alone. You see, there's someone who's been waiting for you. Quietly hoping and praying, everyone is
okay. The first person I'm going to take, let me see, I'm trying to multitask here, type at the same time. I know, Craig, you want to ask a question. First, I'm going to, he's been holding for 47 minutes, and I really want to thank him. I'm going to let Keith Anthony ask his question, if he had one first, and then Craig, I don't know if you're going to call in or just butt in or what you're going to do, but let's hear what Keith Anthony has to say.
Hi, Kim, and hi, Natalie. A fabulous show. I'm real sorry about what happened to your father, Natalie. But what I'm listening to you saying many times, you feel that your father is contacting you, and I'm sure he absolutely is, because I've experienced myself that there is a spirit world. I've been a spirit myself for a time. I remember when I was in coma, standing amongst the doctors, looking at them, trying to communicate with them, thinking, why aren't they doing something? And at the time, it seemed to me that I knew an awful lot more about medicine than they did as a spirit. So it's good and encouraging to hear you talking to me about those events when your father has shown himself to you from the other side, shall we call it. So I just want to encourage you that you're not just imagining it. That really is real. I'll go back to you on that, Kim and Natalie.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And I'm going to mute you for a minute, and then I will come back when we let Natalie loose tonight. But yes, Keith Anthony was one of the people. He's the hypnotist, and he's somebody who's led me through some guided meditations who has really helped my pain threshold. And he's a survivor of a horrible accident where he nearly lost his life. He also crossed over and saw the other side. And so none of us have any doubt, as you don't, that your father's very much alive in spirit in your heart, and able to communicate with you, and I believe that you'll be seeing him again. Craig, are you on the line? Well, okay, let's see. Craig said he wanted your number to call. So let's see. Craig, question mark? Well, hello? Well, I tell you what, Natalie, it doesn't look like Craig. He had sent me a note before saying he wanted to ask you a question, but what I will do is hook you up. Craig is actually, we'll thank him too. Craig started Brain Injury Radio. He had the original show on for about 2 years on Monday nights, so there's a long established crowd. You'll be getting a lot of people listening in the archive, hundreds of listeners actually, so this will be very good exposure for your group. I appreciate it very much, you being a guest tonight. Again, having suffered a ruptured brain aneurysm myself and following your Facebook page and some of the questions and the issues that are posed and getting to know some of the people on the pages, I really appreciate you taking the time. I know you had a really swamped day, but I appreciate the heck out of you coming on and being a guest with me. And again, I am so sorry for your loss. I'm so grateful for your efforts to further this cause, because when I wrote my book, I was hoping that nobody would have to go through the same thing that I did, which is to be in it alone. And that's one of the things that you're remedying, and I appreciate that. So one thing I want to do, because this is kind of new to the studio, if you'll bear with me for one moment. I always forget this. We got a new, bigger studio.
Oh, my.
Recently, I know, and I forget every week, okay? But now I just want to say how much I appreciated Natalie. I hope she'll come back and talk to us again. And let's all thank our guest, Natalie, for being here and sharing with us tonight.
Clap, clap, clap.
The studio has sound effects, Natalie, and I keep forgetting to use them, but I thought you deserved the applause. So,
one quick question.
Yes.
This is Matt.
Yes, Matt.
It's kind of a personal family thing, but it's baseball, too. I was just interested. Did you get to see your Uncle Phil a lot growing up? I mean, were there just holidays you got to spend together, or did you guys go on trips together, or you just got to see him at the ballpark?
Natalie, are you still
unmuted
with us? Actually, everybody is unmuted now. Just a second, I'm going down the line, but I never did mute Natalie. Natalie, are you still with us? Nope. I think Natalie, maybe when we did the applause, maybe she lost her connection. Natalie had a long function all day at a hospital today, and she was calling us from the phone. So we are all in overtime now. She won't be able to get back in. So hopefully she heard that stellar applause at the end. And Craig, if you're wanting to get a hold of Natalie, if you want to send me a private message or get a hold of me somehow, I can give you her telephone number to get a hold of her. I'm not sure where you went or what you wanted to ask. But one thing I want to do, I'm sorry?
Where does she live at? I missed the first part of the show. I was watching the World Series.
She lives in Arizona. Her dad lived in Texas, but she lives in Arizona.
Oh, I see. I didn't know if she was Minnesota or up where you lived, up in that area or something.
Nope. I met her on one of the Facebook pages. And so, Les Paul, are you still there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me right now? I'm actually on two telephones. I have a cell phone on and a regular house phone just in case the same problem happened.
That's greedy.
It sounds perfect now, though. It was just really breaking up bad.
Okay.
But I have been threatening you all week with a surprise, and so I'm going to take...
I've been wondering what you're talking about.
Well, and I'm going to tell you. So if anybody has to take a powder or grab a drink, you've got a minute and 49 seconds to do it, because I am going to tribute to Les Paul...
Okay.
Les Paul. This is Out of Nowhere by Les Paul.
Okay. Oh, all right.
For you.
Thank you so much.
piano?
Yes, guitar. He's a guitarist, but...
Sounds like a piano to me, not a guitar.
She named me Les Paul. When she sang on live radio that covered 3 and 4 states when she was a young girl in the 1930s. And she met him and she fell in love with his music. And I don't know if you know, but he invented a lot of the multi-track recording. He invented the guitar pickups, all kinds of different things. He's one of my true heroes. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. I uploaded a couple with you in mind when I found out we had the famous Les Paul, and I was looking for some music to upload to the studio, and I was hoping you wouldn't see it this last week. I kind of wrote it in code so that I would know.
Well, last night I was saying, what is it she's talking about? I haven't heard anything. Well, thank you very much. You don't know how much that means to me.
Kim, maybe you might like to play some of my music, or how about my Who jingle with the Doctor Who theme? That's a great fun one there.
Well, now I got some music here. Did you guys, Les Paul and Keith Anthony, get the song that I sent you on email hours ago?
No.
Well, you'll have to check it out. Let's see. If you, Mary laid out, so who we have? We have Frank, we have Keith Anthony, we have, oh, well, Les, are you the other Brain Injury Radio?
I don't think so. I just called in on my telephone. Right. Well, I'm on the computer too, but I didn't press anything.
Well, I'm just wondering, we got me, but then we've got another Brain Injury Radio signed in, and that's who I thought was Craig, but it must be you.
Well,
are you signing in with Brain Injury Radio when you're not the host instead of Les?
All I did was click log on, and it just came on. I don't know if it did that by accident, if it remembered some password. I'll sign off of it right now to see what happens.
No, wait.
You want to sign in? See what the sign-in thing says first.
Yeah, you're not going to be able to sign back in since we're after hour. You can stay on the phone, but...
Well, I just closed it thinking I was doing that. Sorry. Oh, well.
Well, what I will say next time is, like, on mine, my computer remembers my own Kim login information.
And that's what I'm wondering if it did that.
It must have. So you want to check, because each time I'm the host, I've got to go in and delete my own personal stuff and type in Craig's information. And that was the thing he was warning us about the other night, that if we forget when it's not our night and there happens to be a host and a co-host and the third person forgets and logs in, he'll knock one of us off.
The one I signed in on, it didn't say Craig on it anywhere. And I just
you do that to me on purpose, then, ain't you?
No. Well, maybe Craig. If Craig was there, he's not talking, and now it's gone. So I think it was you. I think it was you who did it. Yeah. Let's all make sure to double check. I've done it before too. Whichever one, you know, if we start logging in as the host, it might be saving the Craig login information, and we really only want to use that on the night that we're. the night that we're the host.
Yeah, you need to make sure you clear your cookies with Block Talk because that keeps it in as well.
Yeah, the cookies. I didn't think about that. I bet that's what it is. As if it went off.
If you
want to
get into the studio and play, you got to go in under his name.
I call, if you're the host, I call looking around, figuring it out.
You mean if we're going to do tutorials or something?
I keep finding, even when I'm signed in as myself, Keith Anthony, somebody keeps signing in as me and kicking me out, and nobody has my password for Keith Anthony.
Oh, you know what? You just reminded me. When I signed in tonight, it said you were already signed in when I did it for the first time. When you said that, it reminded me. I forgot about that. I'd never seen that before.
I've always signed in by either mine or by Craig. I never know which one. I always change it to me if I'm just listening, and I always change it to Craig if I'm working in the studio or got a show on that night. That's why I say first thing I look for is who's it signed in by.
Well, you do have to, when you're scheduling the show, you got to log in as him. Otherwise, I'd be scheduling my own show, but...
Yeah.
Mine still comes out at 1 o'clock every week, and I have to change it till 10. I don't know what the deal is. He said he fixed it, but evidently it's not.
So you're still having that? Mm.
We have to make sure that we log out of the Craig account once we finish with it, because otherwise, if you come to the show page, you're still logged in as Craig, and then that's going to kick anybody out who's on the same account.
Good point.
Right.
And the way you do that is doing that scroll down, just like when you go to schedule an episode or go in the studio, the bottom choice on that deal is log out. And that's a really good point, because I've made that
very
mistake
important.
Before. Very good. Thanks.
Mm.
Thanks.
Well, Kim, I wish I would have been able to hear more of your guest. I had some things I had to do that kept me out late, and I probably missed the first 20 minutes of it tonight.
Well, I'm just glad you came, because I've been taunting you for a week now about the surprise, and I thought I'm going to be brokenhearted if I don't get to play a Les Paul song without Les Paul here, for God's sake.
And this is something I haven't told you guys, but the week I had my brain aneurysm, and that was back in 1984, I was in Augusta, Georgia at a guitar shop. I'm trying to say the name of it. Oh, it's not coming to me. It's in downtown on Broad Street, where on James Brown Boulevard, down by where a statue of him stands. And there's a music store, and I was looking at Les Paul guitars. And when I was saying, I want to buy one of those. And I said, I'm coming back tomorrow and look at those and probably get me one. I never got one because of my brain aneurysm and then later the brain injuries. And I got one, a very special one, just about a year and a half ago. It's a Les Paul 2550. Look that up and you'll see what I mean.
Awesome. I know about that.
It's a very rare one. It's very special.
It is. I used to play guitar. Not a Les Paul, unfortunately, but that's a wonderful guitar.
It's a special one for the 25th. Let me see. Is it the 25th? And in 1977. It's a 1977 guitar. They only made something like 3,500 of them, 37, 35, something like that. And I managed to get one. And when I got the thing, I thought my teeth were going to fall out of my head because I couldn't believe that the guy sold it to me. So,
how much was it?
I can't tell you. It's top secret. I'll tell you this much. There's one that if you look it up online, it's over $100,000, but it's a different color. Mine is, I can't think of the color, that's something burst, starburst, or I can't think of it. And it's got the most unique pickups of any of the Les Pauls. So it's a very heavy guitar, though. And I'm not talking about heavy rock. I'm talking about heavy, heavy weight.
I'm just sending a text. Natalie sent me. She did sign off. She said that she hoped the listeners enjoyed the show.
Well, what I heard of it was great.
Fabulous.
What a terrible thing. Can you imagine weeks before your wedding having your dad just drop dead like that? What a horrible, horrible thing happened to her.
Well, just goes to show you that at any life, I mean, you know, their lifestyle was probably improved over, say, what mine was growing up, but, you know, it's just family, and you still work at it so hard, and the love and the care, and, you know. What
that's
pain?
Right.
What pain?
Well, the thing I was going to ask is just because being a brain aneurysm and an injury survivor, both of them, dual citizen, I jokingly say all the time.
Yeah.
I don't know what work together closer, like the Brain Aneurysm Foundation and the Brain Injury Association and our group all together.
I'm hoping to be able to do that because one of the things that she said to me when I approached her on it is she hadn't had much to do with this because she stays with the aneurysm. And I said, you know, I did a show all summer just called Recovery Now, and it was geared to general principles of recovery regardless, whether it's a TBI, an aneurysm, cancer, an addiction disorder, abuse, whatever. I said, so my show, you know, there's a lot of you know, a lot of different things, but my show is geared more toward general. I said, but, you know, you would be very surprised, as I was, at how much overlap and crossover I have found there to be. And so, you know, maybe that's part of what my journey is on that show, because people like you really help. You know, you were in the TBI group, but you happened to have an aneurysm. You know, Keith had a bleed, you know. So, interestingly, a lot of people, and then when you guys were talking that one night, like I said, I thought back in my life, and there were three different occurrences where I had really severe clunks to the head. Now they just, you know, let me go. I didn't, I guess, fall into some horrible state back at that time, you know, but they certainly could have had something to do with what happened later. So I think there's more crossover than people know, but in some ways it doesn't surprise me because, you know, all this advocacy for all of the groups is relatively recent with the spread of technology, and so I think it'll only be a matter of time, and maybe it's even starting now that there's a little bit of, you know, crossover going on. So with all the common residuals that a lot of us have, I think it would be crazy not to. But I know that all the professional organizations are all fighting for the same buck, you know, and that could
That's
be part of the problem. But I myself am not interested in the politics, and I have nothing against any of the associations, but none of them had ever done anything for me. So I don't necessarily feel beholden to anybody but the audience, you know. And
I think we can put their feet to our fire for a change, you know, make them, where's the money going? How's it helping people?
Right. Exactly. So did you guys like the guitar licks?
Yes.
Okay, then if you want to take another just over 4 minute break, I'll play you another song while I go grab a drink. This is called Midnight Blues, and it's by Gary Moore.
Okay.
It's the darkest hour. The darkest night, it's a million miles from the morning.
Anybody ever had those?
Oh, yes. That's awesome.
I really like the licks in that.
Mm-hmm.
They break that down. Did you guys fall asleep, Frank, Keith, Anthony?
No.
I'm still here.
Good.
On Facebook. And-
oh, I'm Matt, good. It's you. Okay, good.
Okay.
I was wondering, because I knew we had four people on here. Well, wait, that's me up there. So if Frank's on, we still have him, Matt, Les, and Keith Anthony.
I'm still
okay.
Here.
Yep. All right. I'll see you.
Kim.
Yes.
If there's anything nasty about DJ tonight.
What happened to DJ?
I don't know. He had some pretty heavy stuff up against him on Facebook the last couple of days.
Hmm.
Somebody wasn't happy about him doing something in his support group.
I read about that. I don't know the details.
Someone
I wasn't
asked him about if he was okay. I mean, I don't, you know, I'm not picking sides here or anything. I was just saying nobody likes that kind of stuff thrown about you when you're trying to be an advocate.
Okay.
No, but it was kind of funny, you know, we all handle it different. I didn't see the incident, but I did see him, you know, spouting off about it, and I told him to just blow it off. I found that, you know, now and again we can all be kind of temperamental depending on what's on our plate, you know what I mean? It might not even be about him. It might have been where she was at, you know, in her head, and I told him to just blow it off. Most of the time people are just looking to engage you, and if you don't give them the pleasure, then they're just going to melt and go away. But I don't know, one time something similar happened to me, and I was fairly new at the Facebook deal, and I had put my cursor lightly over this gal's name who I had no idea who she was, and she had a few derogatory things to say, and I thought, who the hell is this gal? Because every time I would post on no matter what Survivor page I would post, she would say something argumentative underneath me, and I was like, who is this woman? I don't even know this woman.
There are people like that, sadly.
Well, it was funny because when I put the cursor over it, lightly over her name accidentally, it said block person.
Oh, wow.
And so, and then it said you could send him a message and block the person. And so my message was, what the hell is wrong with you? And then my other thing is that I blocked her. Well, I wouldn't know how to unblock her if I wanted to, because it was an accident.
That's
the way
correct.
I stumbled into blocking her, but I've never heard from her again. And I suggested that to DJ, and DJ was like all freaked out. He goes, well, then you won't hear what people are saying about you. And I said, exactly. You know, it's like, I don't.
What else is it I don't care to hear, right?
Right. I don't really care, you know, to hear what people are saying about me if they're going to be that way about it, you know. So I don't really know what their problem was. I know that it upset him. They obviously had a disagreement, not a meeting of the minds.
He handled it correctly then by not going back and forth.
Yeah.
On Facebook, you know, argue. I do that with my family, but that's my family.
Well, yeah, one of the things I worry about in situations like that, and why I didn't want to blow up at that girl, and I just quietly blocked her, and I don't know what she had to say afterward, but it would be her that would look like the idiot, not me, because I wasn't saying anything, you know, but it's just that there's supposed to be support and recovery pages, you know, so when you look at the context of the page, if you're arguing with people on it or having disagreements, then that's kind of upsetting. It's not really comforting, which I thought was the, you know, the thrust of these pages. So I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
But I did write him a note and ask him if he was okay, and he said he was, but then some other people kind of picked up the conversation with him, and I had to prepare for the show and do some other things. So I don't really know what the details were about that. I'm glad he dropped in, but he must still be kind of upset about
Well, see, that's one of the things that I try to tell my brain injured friends getting on my Facebook, that now this is my real world and this is my life on there, and you're going to laugh. Just follow the stories and laugh. Don't comment on them.
Yeah.
Don't mess me up.
I'm arguing with my cousin or my brother, and it might be about sports. It might be because he's ugly. I don't know. Just, you know, let us go.
Yeah.
Obviously, I argue about the cops all the time. People think it's funny because somehow I still can ride a little bit. So. And people around here miss me in the paper, so that's one way they can pick up on my riding is by writing on Facebook.
Yeah.
Oh, that's your new paper.
Your new newspaper.
Yeah,
now you're a caster, a TBI caster on Facebook.
Oh, yeah, especially after what that cop did to me and my father. I mean, that's still ongoing, and I don't let that die. I just let that go, and I push it. And if we were on public TV today, we didn't even know it.
Did you, you've got somebody working on your case, don't you? It sounded pretty promising. I mean, it seems like you're able to document your TBI pretty clearly. So for the cop to have misunderstood that you were brain injured, not drunk, that sounds like it'd be a pretty slam dunk case for some attorney you could get interested.
Well, right, but I have they want $5,000 and $10,000. If I had $5,000 and $10,000, I wouldn't be spending it on an attorney on something I didn't do wrong.
Yeah,
you know, they're going to have to figure it out. I was pretty smart in the courtroom long before all this happened, and I was a bailiff for a long time in the Navy, and I'm just going to push it all the way to the end till it don't cost me a dime. Between you and I, I'm fired my public defender just as soon as the last chance I have to fire him, he's fired. That buys me more time right there. They bought
so
3 years.
They don't they do bought. That on a contingent basis then when it comes to criminal stuff you have to pay. Is that right then?
Yeah, they charged me with a felony, said I spit on him. Well, me and the doctors and everybody else would love for me to have been able to spit. That would have been cool. Well, I couldn't spit back then.
Are you spit free?
He says I spit on him. Nobody else does. It's just something he wrote in his book.
Oh.
He said I could hit, or in his report, he said I hit him. Now this is a brain injured guy that can barely just got myself up to lifting 30 pounds. And this guy's got a hold of me, twisting me around. He says I hit him.
Have you got an office of protection and advocacy in your state? Matt?
The Brain Injury Association has a legal representative up in Fort Wayne. I've been in contact with him, but just as of late, like I say, this has been going on for 3 years.
Well,
when I had one lawyer who was getting ready to beat it, they got rid of her and made her a prosecutor. They had to start all over again.
Well, the only reason I asked, and I don't mean to interrupt.
These guys are just rubbing each other's elbows, trying to do stuff. And they're trying to keep us out of the public limelight because they just assumed everybody not know Richmond, Indiana treats their brain injured, let alone their war heroes. They beat up my 90-year-old dad.
Well, I would think they'd want to get rid of it and, you know, not drag it out for 3 years. You know what I mean?
Well,
if they want to keep it out of the public eye, the best way to do that is to deal with it and dispense of it.
Unfortunately, it's one of the same prosecutors I have when he was a non-elected judge. He threw a girl in jail because she fell asleep in his courtroom waiting on her boyfriend to get his date to go to court. She was just sitting back in the back of the room. She was tired. She was a college student. She was tired. She had to take him to court because he had no other way to get there. She fell asleep. He woke her up. She fell asleep again. He threw her in jail for 3 days. Those are the kind of people I'm dealing with.
As a spectator, he threw her in jail?
Yep.
Wow.
Those are the kind of people I'm dealing with.
Well, the only reason I mentioned, this is Les again, I just want to tell you this. Working at a Center for Independent Living, we actually have attorneys working with us. And they sometimes will have a civil rights lawyer for people with disabilities come in and do it for free to help make sure that your civil rights as a person with a disability weren't violated. That's why I was telling you that, to check with your local protection and advocacy office at a Center for Independent Living and just find out what's available, because we have an attorney working at Walton Options where I work myself that goes after cases like this.
The state advocacy that takes care of us people and stuff like that, they said since I had an attorney, they couldn't touch it. I had an attorney, they couldn't touch it.
You don't have an attorney now, though, right? You dumped the attorney, didn't you?
He's still hanging in limbo out there. I got a date now to go in January, so I'm trying to recover from this surgery, from these 93 staples in my legs, what I'm trying to do.
Oh, you make me hurt every time you say that. I can't.
I know.
Well, I mean, I've had other issues along the way, and this one keeps popping his head up, then the other one will pop the head up. Then something else pops his head up, then this one will come back and pop his head up. You know? I mean, I'm just, I try to be funny. I try to laugh at my friends.
Maybe we need some hypnosis for you to hypnotize you from the pain.
when this happened at first, 1 year to the date of my injury, I was a complete basket case. I had not much therapy. And my speech therapist at that point, she spent 2 weeks figuring out a way to get me off of this so I wouldn't think about it. And she did a great job. You know, I got into brain injury recovery more and more each day, more and more each day. The next thing you know, I won an award for this. I didn't even know they had an award for this. Next thing you know, I'm giving speeches, but I didn't even know they did stuff like that.
Wow.
So if I can do anything, I could pat him on the back for sending me into the world of recovery, and it's been a strong one. I ate him alive on that one, but it's still wrong. I still don't want to see. If I give up, I'm afraid I'll be giving in to people across the country that this might happen to them.
Yeah.
You know, in small-town America, the grocery store might be close to the bar, and they see you walking towards your truck somewhere, and you're not walking well, and you get in your truck, they think you're drunk, you're in trouble.
It's a thin line between advocacy and taking care of yourself. You know, I mean, you can't save the world. At some point, you got to let it go and take care of yourself. Like you said, you've been going through hell in a handbasket, and how are you recovering?
That's what all my pros keep telling me. I got to take care of myself. I still think I got to take care of everybody else. That takes care of me.
It brings in another song, Taking Care of Business.
I was going to say, two ways of looking at that. One is you take care of yourself, you can take care of others. One is you don't take care of yourself, and you don't have it left in you to take care of others. So, you know, balance is something that, you know, we've got to, I think, at least I got to watch out for all the time, because I have a tendency to be way on one end of the scale or way on the other end of the scale, and it seems like my life is a constant challenge to keep moving to middle, where I seem to function the best. How's your sore throat, Keith Anthony? Did you get over it?
No, I've still got it. It's sore. It's not too bad. I think I'm using willpower a lot. I think that's the best medicine. And it's still sore. It's not overly uncomfortable or anything like that. And I'm drinking a lot of salt water and stuff to help it along, and that's great. Yeah, I hear you talking about advocacy. We don't have advocacy in England that I'm aware of. I've never heard of it. I've never had any. I've never had any help at all, on certainly no benefits.
We need to come over to England and have an advocacy day or something.
Yeah.
That's where they started the picnics from, isn't it?
Yeah, that Annie. You never have caught up with her, have you? I'll have to connect you guys. I know England it's like saying somebody else in the United States, except England isn't quite as big, but this Annie is very active in traumatic brain injury stuff, and she's on one of those pages that I'll have to figure out where Annie Ricketts, that's her name, right?
Yes.
I'll have to find her. She's in my friends pile on Facebook, and Yes.
Okay.
Global picnic.
Yeah, she's the one that, remember on one show they were talking about the global picnic where everybody was, everyone in the world was having a picnic at the same time to I don't know, commemorate, promote awareness toward traumatic brain injuries, and it was quite a success. But anyway, the gal who is the brainchild of that is this Annie, who's there in England. So I'll have, and she seems like a very nice gal. I've corresponded with her for a couple of times, so I'll have to line you guys up.
Yeah, give her my phone number anytime.
Okay,
yeah, no,
if you have it.
Under Global Awareness Picnic or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I was just on there the other day.
Yeah, she does a really good job. All right, let me see. We got about 15 minutes left, I think, before it'll cut us off, like what happened with you last night, Les.
Yeah, I remember, yeah.
They let us go an hour. If you book an hour and a half show, it lets you do an hour and a half of overtime. But if you've only booked an hour show, like I booked, and most of us have been booking an hour show, then they just give you an hour of overtime. It's the same amount of show that you book. That's why
we've got. I wish I would have done an hour and a half last
night. I did a two-hour show, Kim, and it gave me an hour of overtime.
Okay, well, maybe that's their max then. Maybe
Our max is 3 hours. I think
that's
what Craig said to me. Craig said we have a 3 hour max. We could go up to 3 hours.
Well, maybe you have.
Craig is saying we could do a 3 hour show if we want to, but
I booked 2 hours. Hour show, but I can't. I'm never going to be able to do a three-hour show.
Well, wait a minute. Don't you think, Keith Anthony, that's you schedule a two-hour show and then you get an hour of overtime? That would make a three-hour show.
Yes, but if you schedule a three-hour show, then you get another hour of overtime, which will make it a four-hour show.
You really think it means scheduling a three-hour show? Does somebody have a three-hour? I've never heard anyone have a three-hour. I've seen 2 hours with hour overtime, but never.
I've had three-hour shows many times with another channel. It's a standard thing. If you're paying for your package, you can have a three-hour show if you want to.
That's more than David Letterman.
A Rush Limbaugh.
Can I ask you, Kim?
I'm going to do an hour and a half Sunday. I got a comedian I'm having on the show Sunday.
Oh, okay.
Oh, well, good. Better be pretty darn
comedian.
Funny for an hour and a half.
he used to be a chiropractor. Well, I guess he still is. And he does EEG, neuro reading feedback or something like that. Neuro feedback for folks like us.
That's
EEG
interesting.
Feedback.
When is he a slower comedian?
Yeah.
Oh, no, you'll have to listen to the show for that part. I got to call him tomorrow.
When
he
is
used
your
to my doctor 20 baby. Years ago, and now it's too cool.
Okay.
Well, good. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll laugh. I already told him he can't do no short white bus jokes or nothing like that.
All right, he's got to stay within our FCC standards. What,
that's
Frank?
Right. Okay, is that Matt's show on
Sunday?
On Sunday?
Uh-huh.
Because I've met a chiropractor in town, and he did this scan on me the other day, and he said I have subluxation, which means my spine is out of order. And the spine, he went through at least a half an hour presentation with me over what this means to my body. And I'm trying to convince my trustee to invest $2,669 for a year's worth of service. That's under a third of what he has to pay, what his normal rates are. Half that, another $1,000 of that money is being covered by Medicaid, so I get $1,000 off that. And she wants to know why the hell I want to have that, because this is going to make my life better. And she doesn't know what the hell goes on there. Does anybody know what chiropractors do?
Yeah,
well,
they crack you up.
You're going to hear one Sunday. You ask his opinion, he'll give you a very honest answer. Kevin's
I know.
A good friend.
I know, but I'm just saying
he's a very good man. He's he became a, he was always funny, but he came, became a comedian because his wife left him with three kids, and believe it or not, making a chiropractor wasn't enough money to do the things he needed to do. So he's
okay.
A comedian, he's a chiropractor, he's an EEG neuro reader feedback something, I don't know.
Yeah, that's good. Now you should pop in long enough to ask him the questions, Frank.
Yeah,
I'm
gonna, sure
do. I'm convinced that this guy's going to help me. He's trying to get this information. When I spent an hour and a half with this doctor, he didn't charge me a penny. He took x-rays. He did my back. He did a one free correction of my spine. I slept better last night than I slept in a month.
Great.
But trying to let a person know. It's like, have anybody ever been to a Tony Robbins Unleash a Paladin event?
Oh, yeah.
We Walk on Fire? We Walk on Fire? Have you,
mm-hmm.
Kim?
Yeah,
okay.
I have. I was in sales for 100 years. There isn't anything motivational I haven't done.
And you came back home and you tried to explain that to a person. They couldn't even understand why you were crazy enough to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That means that's why I feel like I'm trying to go back and tell my trustee what this guy showed me in a 5 or 10, 15-minute clip. I can't do it. Because I have a brain injury, I can't remember everything that he said to me, but it was like going to a Tony Robbins event. When I came back from there, people thought I was drinking Kool-Aid.
Just listen in on the show and try out whatever works. You know, there's a lot of different tools, and not all of them work the same way for the same people or even the same people, you know, for an extended period of time, but embrace it while it works.
Well, I just found some information for Keith about advocacy in England. I wanted to give him a website. Is that already everybody?
Please.
It's www.actionandadvocacy.org.uk. And it says disability advocacy, or advocates for disability.
.org.uk, was that?
Yes.
Action and advocacy.
All one word. Action. Let me see. Actionforadvocacy.org.uk.
Actionforadvocacy.org.uk. That's ADVOCACY, isn't it?
Yes.
ADVOCY.
Thank you very much. Was that Frank giving me that?
No, that was Les.
That was Les giving that to you.
Appreciate
and I'll send you Annie Ricketts' information tomorrow, so at least you'll have two different sources in England, in Merriold.
The link doesn't work. Are you sure it's Action for Advocacy, all one word, .org?
Well, here's what I typed to bring up several different links, and I just typed England Disability Advocacy. And it brought up several links,
and that was one of them. Now, I didn't have the .uk written at the end.
You got to do. It was .org.uk.
Yes, I've got it now.
Well,
thanks.
In America, they do .ky for Kentucky.
Okay. All right, Matt, you're in trouble because you're doing that. I'm doing a 3-minute. Music break now. Let's see. Who will it be? Have you guys heard?
I'm going to go. They're going to take a few staples out tomorrow. I want to be up prime ready to go do that. They're not going to take them all, but some.
Yeah.
All right. Good luck.
Don't worry. It's
very
not going to hurt.
It won't hurt near as bad as getting them in.
They always put me asleep for all the good stuff.
that would be a blessing. I got a weak stomach for all of it. Well, and that's something that the title of this one I thought was something we've all could relate to at times in different ways. But this song is by someone called Lily Kershaw, and it's called As It Seems.
Like it.
Night, Nat. Good luck tomorrow.
Good night.
Well, I knew what I didn't want to know, and I saw where I didn't want to go, so I took the path less traveled on, and I let my stories be whispered when I'm gone. When I'm gone, when I'm must find something to live for, 'cause when the darkness comes a-calling, you go back to where you were before. 'Cause this life is as fragile as a dream, and nothing's ever really as it seems. As it seems. As it seems.
As it seems. Yeah, I like that. I put a pretty good mix of different genres on. Yeah, so if you ever don't like something I play, the next song probably won't sound like that.
Keep mixing it up.
I will. I'll keep mixing it up. But it was important to get that Les Paul song out tonight.
Thank you.
I know, I thought of you. I was looking on iTunes, and I was like, I got to find Les Paul. I said, that would be so much fun, since we have our very own Les Paul, if I could surprise him with Les Paul. So my husband walked in the other day, and I was playing it really loud, and he said, who's that? And I said, Les Paul. And he said, the guy from your show? And I said, yeah, he's really famous. The guy, he's doing Blog Talk Radio for free after making all these great albums.
Did you know up until the last 2 years of his life, he was still performing? And he died, I think, at age 91.
Wow.
He performed in a club. I forget what state it was in, but I actually watched him perform on YouTube one day. I was dreaming. I said, I wish I could see him. And then I heard that he died around that time.
Wow.
He's
fantastic. He had a passion for it. And just like your topic last night about the musical, you know, therapy, obviously it was good for him for 90 years. It was his passion. So he continued as long as he could. He was blessed in that way.
He sure was.
Cool. Keith Anthony, did you have a question?
I was just thinking about all of the music you're playing. Have you always done that, or was that only because I put some music on mine? Because I was trying to be unique, and I think I've been the same as everyone else.
Well, it's neither, actually. In the beginning, when he told me we were going to get AM syndication rights, and then he said it was a talk show, because Matt was talking about uploading a bunch of 60s and 50s music, and Craig mm-hmm. seemed to back off from that and poo-poo that. And so I thought that meant that we were supposed to be a talk show, and maybe it was we weren't supposed to be putting on music.
I kind of thought the same thing.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Even a talk show can play music. They're just little sound bites. As long as you're not playing all music like a DJ. But I think just an occasional track is nice. Breaks it up a bit. Gives us all a chance to go and go to the restroom or go and get a tea or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and, that's nice.
I asked him specifically the other day, I said, does it matter if I play music on the show? And he said, you can do anything you want on the show. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, it hadn't occurred to me. I was in a mindset thinking we were a talk show, but I was like, well, heck, if we can play music, I got all kinds of stuff I want to upload. I don't want to overburden the studio by having too much stuff in it, but that's why I picked a pretty broad mix, mm-hmm. and I just figured that I'd do overtime on, I probably won't play the songs very often during the hour, but when we do overtime, sometimes I'll probably just put some music in, unless we're talking about, you know, something heated and we're just kind of hanging out, then
uh-huh.
probably play a few songs.
I'm going to be on my next show, I'm going to do a quiz, just a very simple, very quick quiz. Takes seconds to do it, and that should be fun, I hope.
Oh, good.
And you'll hear what is on the show. So make sure you have your ears on, because there might be a prize to win.
Right. Okay, we're off.
Fabulous.